from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out how The Warehouse in Carmel brings top talent to a small venue.
I'll chat with German artist Catherine Hilden about her new show at the Athenaeum.
And I'll chat with artist Nancy Maxwell about her show in Speedway. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Warehouse in Carmel has become known as a small listening room that features some pretty big names in the music industry, including Josh Kaufman, Judy Collins, Joan Osborne, Leon Russell, and so many more. Travis DiNicola spoke with Heather Ramsey-Clark to find out how she's bringing such big names to this intimate venue.
Heather, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
You as well, Travis. Thanks.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this conversation just to talk about all the amazing talent that you're bringing into The Warehouse. But before we get to that, help me and listeners understand about what this venue is in Carmel, in the Carmel Arts and Design District. It's kind of a small listening room that was an old warehouse, right?
It was. It was actually originally the Reeder and Klein building was how it was known in the 50s when it was built. And they used to make airplane engine parts in there. So it was eventually divided up into a number of little artist type spaces. Yeah. And when the space came open, we envisioned just a kind of a simple concert venue. We really didn't know what it was going to shake out to be at first, mm-hmm. but as it developed, somebody coined the term listening room, and I said, yeah, that's exactly what this is. There's no, you know, the bar is outside. The emphasis is really entirely focused on the experience of the music in front of you, mm-hmm. And the sonic experience you get to have with those artists. And so the listening room concept has really become quite popular in the music industry as a whole, mm-hmm. and we're seeing bigger and bigger artists who are interested in that.
Smaller venues where people can sit down and not have to crowd and stand.
Correct.
Right?
And it's not as focused on, you know, the food or the drink as much as the music experience is.
Do you guys have drink and food, right?
We have drink.
Drink, no food.
And
okay.
We have the basics on the food side, but we do not, we're not a restaurant. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that we're a venue with a bar, not a bar with a stage.
Got it. Okay. So, but people can get drinks and some basic
they
food.
They can. Uh-huh, yeah. We carry beer and wine license. So.
Okay. And it is for most shows all ages? Is that right?
All shows are all ages unless the artist for some reason specifically requests not.
Okay.
You know, obviously there are those artists who perhaps have very colorful language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
It would be sort of at your own risk. But no, we are always all ages unless the artist deems it otherwise. So.
Do you see a lot of families or younger people coming to the show?
We do, actually. Yeah. I wouldn't say a lot, mm-hmm. but specifically when there's an artist that someone is really excited about, we will see like a dad bring his son because he wants to share, you know, Leo Kottke, or he wants to share John Mayall because that's somebody that he cared about when he was young. So
Sure. Cool. And it is about listening. It's not like crazy. This is about like listening to great music in a very intimate venue.
It is. It doesn't mean people don't get up and dance in the aisles occasionally. When Paul Thorne was there this last weekend, it was, you know, we had a bit of a hootenanny at the end. I mean, because he inspires that in his guests. Whereas with John Waite, it was a more it was a conversation. So we did a Q&A. And his entire, like the thrust of his set was actually designed around the questions that the audience asked, which I think you can do when you have 40 years of music history under your belt. But so that was a much more, it was much more of a conversational show.
Okay.
And so it just depends on what the artist really wants to bring to the table.
So about 150 seats? Is
150
that...
seats, mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to read the names of some of the artists you have coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Many that I've seen. All that I've seen have been in large venues, and I mean large venues, not intimate at all. Josh Kaufman, of course, from Indianapolis, Don McLean, Leon Russell, Judy Collins, Madeleine Peru, who I just adore, Diane Scher, who's amazing, Lisa Loeb. Mm. I mean, the list, and when Joan Osborne, you just added. How are you getting artists like this to come to such a small venue?
Well,
how does this work? I mean,
we're magic. It's magic. I don't. We have been really blessed, Travis. I have no other way to say it. It's just the stars have aligned. Our booking manager, Bob McCutcheon, he used to own the Ritz Theater on the east side of town. He's been doing this for a long time, and he said, "Look, I really think that this is cool, and I think I could bring something to the table." And so he started the conversations with the agents, and as I've continued those conversations, and he has as well, we're finding that the agents more and more hearing from the artists is we want to get back to the music. It's hard to in this environment where you don't make as much on your recordings anymore. You know, yeah. Spotify, that digital age makes things really difficult for the artists, and so they have to go on tour. But they want an opportunity to really be like get back to the soul of why they did this in the first place.
I mean, I'm sure the artists love it. I mean, I have no doubt
they do.
Like performing to 150 people. But I mean, a lot of these people, like Don McLay and Madeline Peru. I mean, when I've seen them, we're talking venues that are maybe 2,000-3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm, if I'm pushing too much, tell me here. But I'm trying to figure out, so how do the artists make money when they're playing for such a small venue? I mean, you guys have to charge a little bit more, but
our ticket prices
are not out of line with what you would pay at a big venue.
No, we try very hard to keep that. It's more like 150 box seats.
Yeah.
But because we are not a restaurant and we're not a bar that has to be open 7 days a week, we don't run the same type of an operating budget. So you're going to have a much different approach when you're not trying to account for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, mm-hmm. and maybe Thursday in your operating budget. So for us, the product being the music is really makes that possible.
But are the artists, taking a little bit of a loss compared to another venue because they want to play in a small venue or?
Rarely.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
We try to be very fair in all of our offers. We don't ask the artists to nickel and dime. And if they're routing through Indianapolis, maybe they can't fill a 5,000-seat venue, or they're a little skittish about a 500, but 150 sounds great.
Yeah, I'm
sure. They know they're going to have a sold-out house. They know everybody who's in there is going to be an absolute dedicated fan.
Mm-hmm.
So their experience and the audience experience is going to be a better one.
It's a great one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the artists love it, and the agents are getting on board, you said.
The agents love it, yeah. I mean, this weekend, we just had sold-out Will Hoag on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was just masterful. And the audience, they just couldn't wait. People who'd seen him. One guy had seen him 110 times. They're a very dedicated fan base for a lot of these artists, and so they're very excited to get to experience them. When Edwin McCain was there, I heard one of the audience members, one or two of them, in fact, said, "I feel like I'm getting to know him." So instead of like a house concert where you're at somebody else's house, you feel like you're at the artist's house, and you get that insight into their personality, and most of them are very funny. Like they're very engaging and they have great stories, and so you get to actually take time to get to know them and you feel like on a more personal level.
I mean, in some ways, this isn't a whole lot different from cabaret style type of music, but when we think of cabaret, we think of Great American Songbook, we think of more traditional jazz singers. I mean, some great concerts, in that style, and specifically here with the cabaret in downtown Indianapolis. But this is in a way sort of taking that type of intimate venue and doing it with a lot of different other types of musicians.
Yeah, we're trying to really branch out in different genres so people can experience, the blues or jazz or, even some pop or and classic rock plays really well there. I had not listened to Winger. That was not something that I had grown up listening to. But when Kip Winger got on stage, I was instantly a fan. Mm. I mean, he just, I'm learning about artists that I wouldn't necessarily have known about because their stories, their talent really gets to shine in that type of an environment.
Sure. Okay, so give me a preview of, I mentioned a number of artists that you have coming up over the next few months up through the end of the year, but that's not even scratching the surface, and there's many concerts. What are some you want to highlight that are coming up?
Well, some of the ones I really want to highlight are definitely, I'm excited about Spyro Gyra.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that one I'm really, really super excited about. I don't want to shortchange anyone because I'm
again,
excited
like,
about all of them.
Spyro Gyra I saw years ago in a big festival with like 3,000 people,
right.
And it's like, okay, so this would be so cool.
Well, and I think of it like, when a star blows up and there's like the supernova and then at some point it's going to collapse into this little hot white star.
Uh-huh.
And that's what happens is that energy just like, you get to put it in a room and it almost vibrates the walls. In terms of other artists that I'm excited about, you mentioned Don McLean, Lisa Loeb. I'm really excited about Lisa Loeb.
She is such a great singer-performer. I mean, if you don't know who she is, I mean, she kind of got a bit big with some music she did in mid-90s on the Reality Bites soundtrack, and mm-hmm. but has done a lot of other great acoustic work, singer-songwriter type stuff since.
I'm actually also very excited about Tiffany. She's coming on August 25th. And, you know, Tiffany was like, you know, I'm sure I had the cassette tape.
Oh, yeah.
I think I
pop star, late 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she has got so much more going on. And when her agent approached us, I'm like, oh, Tiffany, is she still doing the 80s bangs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And no, I mean, she's a beautiful woman, and her songwriting is outstanding. So I'm really excited that this is the type of environment where that kind of an artist can come and kind of share with people, hey, I'm a lot more than that, those two songs that you knew about with me.
Right. Yeah. Very cool. What are some other shows?
Yeah. So we've got Jim Messina coming also in October from Loggins and Messina, which that's one of, like, I listen to them all the time. Leon Russell, I think you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. And we just rolled in.
You know, the woman who is the president of the Leon Russell fan club lives in Indiana.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
This I did not know.
Okay. So, well,
we will have mm-hmm. to look her up. Mm-hmm. That show has been going like hotcakes. Tim Reynolds from TR3 and Dave Matthews Band is coming also in October. And, of course, you mentioned Joan Osborne. And
she's doing a show with, a couple other people, like an acoustic show? Is that right?
Or? Yeah. She's bringing in her trio.
Her trio.
She's gonna Joan is going to be, and she's going to be doing music from her Bob Dylan songbook collection.
Yeah.
So she's actually going to be, she was trying to decide back and forth what kind of a style show she wanted to bring, and that was what she decided on. So.
I just heard actually an interview with her. She was on Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, of course, and mm-hmm. she was talking about what an influence and mentor Bob Dylan was for her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
cool.
You can kind of hear it in like her writing style, and things. I wouldn't say they're similar. I don't think anybody's quite like Bob. We just announced last week June Carter Cash and Johnny Cash's son, John Carter Cash, mm-hmm. and his current fiance. But by the time they're here in December, they'll be married,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be doing some of the songs of Johnny and June together. And we're really excited to have them because that's as close as you can get.
Yeah,
obviously. I feel like that's going to be a really fun show and unique opportunity to see them.
So tickets go fast for a lot of these shows.
They do go fast. I think people ponder. Mm-hmm. They try to decide, like, you know, which experiences do I want to have, and then make sure that, because it's not the type of thing where you want a chance coming the day of.
Yeah.
Because it's very possible to be sold out.
I know Josh Kaufman's coming up soon, and it's probably, you know, you may be able to get a ticket at the door, but probably not.
Probably not. With his CD release, you mm-hmm. know, it's his EP release now, and he's got a new song that just popped out on Yahoo,
mm-hmm.
and a tremendous tune called Truth Be Told. So we're really excited to get to host his CD project. Release.
So people can get tickets on your website?
They can, liveforthemusic.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can actually just go right to our ticket page if you click on calendar, and the shows are all there in chronological order. You pick what you want, a couple of clicks, and you're done.
Cool. Very cool. Do you have any sort of, is there like a series or subscription? Or are you guys looking at doing that at some point?
We are looking at the option mm-hmm. for like VIP memberships coming down the road for those who, we have several customers, based clients, friends, we consider friends now. They say, I want those two seats for every show.
Mm-hmm.
Could I just have those two seats, please? I say for $1 million, we only need to sell one, you know.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Right. That's awesome. Well, Heather, thank you so much for coming in. And I mean, this is really delightful how the warehouse has grown, because you guys just opened, what, in 2014? And,
yeah, we're 2 years old.
And I mean, to be able to put up the lineup you do, you know, each and every weekend is just outstanding. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I encourage people to come check it out.
Travestina Cola with Heather Ramsey-Clark from The Warehouse in Carmel. For more information and a complete schedule, visit liveforthemusic.com. liveforthemusic.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Catherine Hilden is a Chicago-based visual artist who is in the process of relocating to Indianapolis. For You Have 10 Minutes, her new exhibition of prints at the Athenaeum in July, she's drawn on a remarkable chapter of history and her own German heritage. Here's Catherine's conversation with Sharon Gamble.
So welcome to Indianapolis for this show, actually.
Thank you, Sharon.
Are you from the Chicago area?
I am, yes. I live just north of Chicago. Mm-hmm. I live in Evanston, Illinois, which is a college town, as everybody knows.
Yeah, beautiful town with lots of great restaurants and bookstores.
Yes.
Yeah, and lots of good art.
Yes, yes, indeed. I teach at the Evanston Art Center.
Mm-hmm. And you studied at the Art Institute.
I did. I had a scholarship at the Art Institute. And prior to that, I studied math and German literature.
Yes, I saw that on your biography.
So I have degrees in math and German.
And so this is not a common career path, mathematics to German literature to visual art. Tell us about that.
Oh, I always drew as a kid, and I was always interested in figuring out how things work, which is related to math.
Mm-hmm.
When I majored in math, I actually wanted to understand relativity theory. And I wasn't very good in math, but German is my native language,
mm-hmm.
and so that was a fairly easy transition.
Mm-hmm.
So then I immediately went into a master's program in German without having any other degrees in German prior to that. And then I taught college German, which immersed me in art and philosophy
mm-hmm.
and metaphor and literature and mm-hmm. so forth. Well, it's a logical step to go into visual arts after that.
I'm not sure.
Of course, it is.
Everybody would have reached that same
conclusion. especially if you've been drawing all your life,
and
even as a math major, when you found a free moment, you actually drew instead of figuring out more equations. So it wasn't that drastic a transition at all. It was quite natural.
So you're using your full brain, left side and right side.
Yeah, I am. I like to think so. Yes, it works.
So I have to ask you this, as somebody who is deeply committed to language, German and English both, what is it you find you can express in visual art that you can't in words?
This is a very, very good, very good question. When I started this project that's going to be exhibited at the Athenaeum, which deals with genocide in the Balkans in 1944 to 48, a genocide committed against the German population there, I felt I could have written about it. I suppose I'm fairly verbal. I could have written something, but then I thought this is a very difficult subject, and difficult subjects are very often more accessible if you have a sort of intermediary medium, so to speak, and not a direct address to the subject. And so being a visual artist, I thought I could paint. I could produce a large series of huge paintings, for example, in the spirit of Anselm Kiefer, who has these enormous paintings where he glues straw and barbed wire onto it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could have done a series of drawings, which would have been an illustration of these horrors. And I really struggled with this for years, actually. And then I finally decided I had to do this in printmaking, which I had also studied, but which isn't necessarily my strong medium, although I think it has sort of become a strong medium. Am I approaching your question?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, why didn't I write about it? Because the medium that I chose, the printmaking, turns out that the techniques I used are quite metaphorical to the subject. So form and content is always being discussed by artists.
Mm-hmm.
And optimally, the two merge, or optimally, the form actually becomes the content.
Mm-hmm.
And so in printmaking, the technique I use is an intaglio technique, not etching, but dry point.
Tell us more about what that entails. What is
okay,
that process?
Yes, indeed. Actually, I use two techniques. I use dry point and I use monoprint. In dry point, I start with a copper plate and I rip the lines of the drawing into the copper. So that's already fairly painful.
That's, and what is that? What is that tool like?
Oh, the tool is a stylus, a very, very hard metal and mm-hmm. very sharp. And so you rip the line into the copper directly, which makes it very difficult to control the line.
Sure.
And the line is not graceful because of the severity of the movement. And so you already get a sense of pain involved in
that. It sounds violent.
Yes. Yes, it is. And then that is inked so that the ink goes below the surface of the plate. Which is why it's called intaglio. So the ink is below the surface of the plate in the lines, and then the excess ink has to be wiped off. This involves a hot plate because the ink has to partially melt. I mean, printmaking is really arduous and very difficult, which is why I chose it for the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So once that stage is done, I roll various colored inks onto the plate. And in my case, they're very luminous, very, very bright emerald greens and magentas and so forth. And then the third stage is I remove some of the ink through an accidental process of dabbing a solvent onto the plate. And sometimes, and I do that with my eyes closed. It has to be accidental. Has to be very irrational,
mm-hmm.
very accidental. And I dab the solvent on there, and sometimes I hit the face of a person.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are human
mm-hmm.
Portrayals. Sometimes the face of a person is hit, a child, or the chest, and so forth. And in the process of working on these prints and working with a master printer, because I had to figure out how to create these effects, which, as far as I know, have not been done before on,
mm-hmm.
on prints. In the process of doing that, it dawned on me what the title of the series had to be, because when I started the project, I really didn't even know where this was going to lead,
mm-hmm.
which is very characteristic of art, right? We start something. Novelists do this, right? They start with a setting or a character, and then the whole thing takes over. So it wasn't until just a couple of months before I concluded at least this stage of the process, which means that I've finished 152 prints, that it dawned on me what I should call the series. And I call the series, "You Have 10 Minutes." Now, why? Where does it come from? All right. So the subject that I'm dealing with here is the destruction or the evacuation and the destruction of a culture that existed in Serbia, Hungary, and Romania, and that whole area, mm-hmm. which was German. And the Germans had settled there in the late 17th century. So they had lived there for 250 years. They all spoke multiple languages because they had to interact with the Romanians, the Hungarians, and the Serbs.
Mm-hmm.
But their culture and their identity was mainly German.
Mm-hmm.
And they were citizens of that particular country, in my case, Yugoslavia, which is also now known as Serbia.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in the Second World War, the Germans were trapped, right, and were declared non-citizens in November of 1944. Tito, the ruler at that time, declared that the Germans, who were citizens, were from that point on, November 1944, were not citizens and had no rights. They had no rights to life or to property,
mm-hmm.
which means they were forcibly evicted, and those who managed to flee managed to survive in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
But 70,000 people were marched off into concentration camps, and I was one of them. I was two at that time. And so my mother said what happened was that a soldier stood at the door with his rifle and said, "You have 10 minutes.
10 minutes to try to assemble family could take.
10 minutes to dress your children. The men had all been shot, or they were away fighting in the war. And that's right, you have 10 minutes. So you have a woman here in her house with 2 children. And she has to quickly gather some things up." And when I realized that had to be the title, because what I'm working with is photographs from the people from that area. Mm-hmm. And in that whole area, Hungary, Romania, Yugoslavia, there were 1.5 million of these Germans. And in Yugoslavia itself, there were 500,000 people. Okay. When I decided to do this project, I went to the cultural center of these Germans who are now, very, to a great extent, live in this country. Mm-hmm. Many live in Germany, many live in the United States. And wherever they gathered, whether it's in Cincinnati or in Chicago or in Los Angeles or in Toronto, they have these little cultural centers. Actually, they're not even that little. They have banquet halls, and they have dances, and they have classes for their kids. And I went there and gave my little speech about I'm working on this project. Would people come in with photographs? And they did. So the next time I went there, these women, this is a woman's group I addressed, came in with these old photographs. Now imagine this. Imagine that there's a soldier at the door, and he's saying, "You have 10 minutes. And you gather up a coat and a blanket, maybe, and maybe you have a piece of a loaf of bread or something that you can quickly gather up. You have no vehicle with which to carry these things. Mm-hmm. And then what you do, you open the drawers and you gather up photographs. See, this gives me goosebumps every time I talk about this. This is what you do. You know that the photographs are not going to help you survive in what's coming next. It's not clothing. It's not a blanket. It's not food. It's not going to help you physically survive, but psychologically, spiritually, it helps you survive. And these women managed to preserve these photographs in these horrendous situations. I mean, these were then concentration camps where people starved to death, froze to death, and were beaten and so forth. And people died every day and were carted off. And these women somehow had these photographs strapped to their bodies and managed to preserve them. And so at this cultural center, then I had all these photographs in front of me and I took pictures of them. And then I loaded them into my computer, and that's what I drew from. And that moment, that is the key moment, that you're now going to be marched off into concentration camp, and you're probably going to die. And what do? You gather up the photographs that document the life you had in this really abundant country. There was a lot of land. They had, you know, millions of acres there. And it was very fertile land. And they had a good life. And they had built this thing up out of nothing because they were pioneers. They literally came with nothing and floated down the Danube. By the way, these people, these Germans, are called Danube Swabians. In German, that's the Donauschwaben. Because they, in those 2.5 centuries, primarily in the 18th century, they gathered in a town called Ulm on the Danube in Germany, in southern Germany, ULM. And they drifted down the Danube on barges, had no keel. They drifted down until they came to this designated, I don't know how they recognized where they were supposed to get off. And then they used the lumber from the barges to build huts and survived and so forth. And so they're called the Danube Swabians because the area of Germany where they come from is called Swabia. It's the southwestern corner of Germany.
Sharon Gamble with artist Catherine Hilden. Her exhibition, You Have 10 Minutes, comprising 24 prints, is on view at the Art Space at the Athenaeum through July 30th. You can contact Catherine for more information at CatherineHilden@gmail.com. That's Catherine and then H-I-L-D-E-N at gmail.com. And you can also visit AthenaeumFoundation.org.
Like the pink ones, don't you?
And the purple
and
ones.
Oh, I love the purple ones, mm-hmm. too. And the blue ones, I read the blue ones are the hardest color to get.
Yes, and then the ones go, like sort of shoot off like machine guns. Yeah,
I love those.
Oh, we are so ready for some fireworks.
We are so ready for some fireworks. But you know what? There are lots of other things blowing up in the arts this week. I mean, exciting things going on in the arts this week. And we're going to tell you about some of them on our calendar we call
What Do We Do? The Red, White, and Blue Edition.
Red, White, and Blue Edition. Love it.
Metamorphis. And this is Gregory Hancock Dance Theater. They are performing Metamorphis this weekend, July 1st and 2nd. 7 o'clock both nights at the Tarkington, the Center for the Performing Arts up in Carmel. You get more information at Gregory Hancock DanceTheater.org, and this is all about change. It's about Gregory Hancock's artistic journey from past to present, Metamorphis, and it is going to be a really, really interesting concert. It culminates in the world premiere of Gregory's newest ballet and the one that honors his mother, who inspired and sustained him in his art, and it should be a really poignant show. So again, Metamorphis, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater, Friday and Saturday, the 1st and 2nd at the Tarkington.
Fantastic. I have something that is sure to make your taste buds explode if you do it right. Mm-hmm. It's Taste of Indianapolis. Taste of Indy. It's a little more casual. Taste of Indy. It's this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. So you could have, theoretically, you could have breakfast, lunch, and dinner at this one festival. Some of the city's most unique and interesting restaurants come together for a one-day festival on Monument Circle. You can have Asian food, Greek food, Cajun food, Latino food, and as they say, many, many more. And there will be five local music groups performing throughout the day. This all takes place on Monument Circle. Tickets are $6 in advance, $8 the day of the event, and free for children 6 and under. But bring some money to spend on food at Taste of Indy this Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Excellent. I just went to a really cool show at the Arts Council's 924 Gallery. That's at 924 Pennsylvania. And the show's called Town and Country. And it's actually been open since June 3rd, so it's been open for a while, but it doesn't close until July 8th, so you still got time to see it. And it features the work of great local artists Kip Norman and Kyle Ragsdale. And Kip is really known for his sort of assemblage and collage work, and Kyle for these great paintings that he does, sort of impressionistic people. And both of them cross over a bit. So Kyle's doing some collage and Kip is adding some painting, but all the work, and they're all kind of connected, have to do with different Indiana stories and Indiana history. And it's a really fascinating exhibit, especially if you know the work of these two artists and like them, just the way that it kind of pushes both of them into some different areas, and the way that it's curated is really terrific. Really interesting exhibit, worth checking out at the 924 Gallery at the Arts Council. And again, that's Kip Norman and Kyle Ragsdale, and it's up through July 8th.
Speaking of shows, a different kind of show on stage at Theater on the Square through just this weekend. This is your last few chances to see Time Stands Still. Donald Margulies is the playwright. Probably his best known work was Dinner with Friends. He's really excellent at these intimate plays with not very many characters and injecting humor, but also getting right to the heart of a subject. In this case, the lead character is a woman photojournalist who has been covering a war and has been fairly severely injured. And it deals with her journey back to health and trying to figure out if what she's doing for a living is the right thing for her to do and if it's making a difference in the world. And again, some romantic relationships and a lot of surprising amount of humor as well. Time Stands Still on stage through this weekend at Theater on the Square. Learn more at tots.org. Tots.org.
And some cool things going on at the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site for the July 4th weekend. Patriotic celebrations, three different events over one holiday weekend. So on July 1st, 8:30 a.m., they have their monthly Coffee with the Curator, where you can go in and hear their curator talk about specific works from the Benjamin Harrison Site. And then at 10 a.m. on the 1st, the Federal Court Summer Naturalization Ceremony. This is a great thing where a whole bunch of people become U.S. citizens, and they do it at 10 a.m. on July 1st at the President Benjamin Harrison site at 16th, it's more sort of 12th in Delaware.
Yeah.
And then on July 4th at 1 o'clock, the free event, their Independence Day Ice Cream Social. Come out and get some ice cream and celebrate at the President's
We
home.
All scream for ice cream.
Yes, we do.
Speaking of fireworks, which is how we started this calendar, don't forget on July 4th from 6:30 to 11 p.m., you can celebrate Independence Day with a bang or a blast at the Downtown Freedom Blast. It's Indy's largest fireworks display, shooting off from the top of the Regions Bank Tower at about 10 p.m. So if you have to get up early the next day, you might be needing a little nap there. But remember, sunset isn't until about 10. The Indiana War Memorial is a perfect spot to view the fireworks, plus enjoy pizza and music. So lots going on way before the fireworks go at July 4th, Monday evening, 6:30 to 11, Downtown Freedom Blast.
Very cool. Hey, you may have always wanted to dance like a Bollywood dancer.
I have. How did you know?
Well, I always suspected that, Sharon. Modus Dance, which does some great classes and great performances as well, is doing a Bollywood summer session.
What?
So you can learn how to dance like a Bollywood dancer for a five-week session. Starts July 12th. And it just sounds like a lot of fun. If you go to the Modus Dance's website, just Google Modus, M-O-T-U-S. You can find out more about all their cool classes, including their new Bollywood class.
Still to be determined, the cast of The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel Part 3.
Exactly. There you go, Sharon.
With all of us local dancers. And don't forget to tune in next week. We'll give you some more things to see and do in the arts, explosive and not. And you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. Or, of course, listen to us next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Red, White, and Blue.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Landscape painter Nancy Maxwell has a show of her work at the Speedway Center for the Arts in July. This show, called Nostalgic Impressions, is her first solo show in the Indianapolis area, though she's been promoting other artists for quite a while, as Travis DiNicola found out.
Nancy, welcome to Art of the Matter. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
Absolutely. And congratulations on your upcoming show, your first solo show in the Indianapolis area.
Yes, that's correct. I'm going to be at the Speedway Center for the Arts in July.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So let's talk about your work. You are primarily a plein air painter?
Yes. I start most of my work as a plein air painter, take a lot of photographs, make some notes, some references, and frequently then finish the paintings in the studio. But my work is, for the most part, Indiana, Midwest landscape painting.
Where do you go usually? Where do you like to go?
I tend to work just in the central Indiana area, although I enjoy travel, and I always try and paint when I do travel. But, central Indiana is rich with subject matter and, old barns, old bridges, cows. Right now, Morgan County's looking at, along with everybody else in Indiana, bicentennial, and we're doing images of Morgan County. So I'm doing some pieces that are our courthouse and, the historic old bridge in the county, that kind of thing. But I don't need to get too far from home.
No. So what do you like to pay attention to when you're outside? I mean, the light?
I think the thing that always grabs me is the light. Mm-hmm. You've got to have some really strong contrast. If you, you know, there's always something about a scene. It might just be one little gate post. It might be the side of a barn. But there's always something. And for me, it tends to be the contrast between light and dark. And, you know, that sets up your focal point of your painting, and you move out from that point.
Sure. Do you know where you're going when you go out on a drive with your canvas and paints, or you just sort of wander around the back roads and hope you don't end up on some angry farmer's property?
Right. Well, you always want to check. You always want to knock on the door and say, can I paint there? And sometimes they're afraid you're going to try to sell them something. Mm-hmm. But I have ideas from drives I've taken previously, but sometimes it's just a matter of driving down the road till something suits you, and then you stop and pull over. I keep my car painting ready.
Okay.
Anytime except for really cold winter. I'm not a real winter outdoor painter, but I always have paints and canvas and all the setup I need to stop anywhere and just at least do a short sketch.
Studio on wheels.
Right, studio on wheels. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very car cool. Smells like linseed oil most of the time.
So how did this come about for you to have the show at Speedway?
We were in contact. It's sort of a series of things.
Sure.
I met Amy Carroll, who is the director at the Speedway Arts Center, through some other artist friends, Douglas David, who had a show there last year and is a painting buddy of mine. And
another great plein air painter.
Yeah, plein air painter, just a great mentor and friend, and we enjoy painting together a lot. So he connected me with Amy. They were just really getting up and running. I think he was probably the first solo show.
Yeah, I believe so.
And she came down to my studio to sort of reciprocate a visit and said, hey, you know, we like your work. Why don't we set you up for a show? So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Nice. So about 30 pieces.
25 to 30 pieces.
All landscapes. You know,
all landscapes for the most part. Might be one or two still lives in there. I don't do too much still life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll take more than that, and then we'll figure out what fits on what wall and how the show goes together. So it's some of it's new work that I've been painting fast and furiously in the last few months, and some of it
getting
is some pieces I've had a while, but it'll be new to the Speedway area,
right.
And Speedway's a kind of exciting, happening place now. You know,
well, Amy's doing some great work out there with the Center for the Arts out there, as well as all of Main Street's just a whole lot of fun.
Right, yeah, lots of great restaurants and brew pubs, and, you know, great place to spend an evening coming to the Art Center and having dinner out. So,
now, I'm curious about your other work, because in addition to a painter, you also do a lot of work with the Indiana Arts Commission and promoting other artists. Tell me more about that.
Right. I like to wear several hats in the artist community, partly because Morgan County is a rural community. And
that's where you're based?
Yeah. My studio is in Martinsville, and I'm active in several organizations there. I serve as the area representative, the Morgan County rep for the IAC. We're kind of in a district. Indiana's divided into several districts, and there's a rep in every county. So that's a little bit of decision-making discussions occasionally, helping with some grant reviews, helping people find the information for artist grants, those kinds of things. Locally, I'm on the CVB, the Tourism Bureau for the county, if you will, and the job there is to promote tourism, and particularly my position on the board is to promote arts and culture in the community, get people to come to town because there are art and culture things happening. I write a weekly column for our local paper that just lists, you know, what you can do if you're out and about, and there's usually more things there than people realize.
So what's going on in Morgan County if someone's looking for a little day trip?
Right now, Morgan County, I try and cover, like, we've got several Morgan County artists who have work in the Indiana Heritage Art Show, which is still up in Brown County. So there are three Morgan County artists that got into that. There are four got into that, three that got into the Hoosier Salon Show, which we, you know, coming up here, but it's to celebrate our artists. Couple of our local quilters are in the Marie Webster retrospective at the Indiana Museum of Art. So this week's column was more about, you know, who's in what show and where you need to go
see it. Okay.
We've got some kids' camps locally that are we do a great architecture camp with Indiana Landmarks in Morgan County for kids 8 to 12 kind of, and this year's subject was local houses, doorways, types of houses that are, you know, visible in the community. So we just finished up that camp, and that's based at the Facility Art Sanctuary, where I have my studio.
And tell me the name of that again.
Art Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. It's a refurbished old Methodist church. It's now studio space for about 22 artists.
Okay.
We sort of keep our own hours and our own time.
And that's in Martinsville?
That's in Martinsville. Mm-hmm. And we do a second Friday of the month open house every second Friday. So that'll be July 8th this month. And all
Great.
The studios are open and people can come visit and drop in. So usually have a show opening. Somebody will be in the main gallery there. So it's a nice venue and it's a great place to have a studio. So it works well.
Excellent. So is there a Morgan County style?
I don't think so. You know, we claim a few famous painters.
Mm-hmm.
Clifton Wheeler from Mooresville area was an interesting painter. We had a Dutch man, Antonius Rammacher, that lived in Martinsville for years and years. His daughter was a war bride, and they came over because of that. And so there are lots of people that have Pop Rammacher's paintings, and he's one of our claims to fame art-wise. But I don't think there's a style. I think we're pretty Brown County-ish, if you will, you know, attached to that era.
So a fair number of other plein air painters, and such. So with the work that you're putting together for your upcoming solo show, again, at the Speedway Center for the Arts, do you have any particular favorites that you're just really thrilled to
I am
be
always
exhibiting?
Drawn back to, interesting skies and strong, warm, usually fall colors, but even summertime colors. Got a couple of pieces. One that I'm hoping gets done. I'm about finished with it. It's just a lake scene with some canoes, kind of, you know, camp at the end of the day. The life jackets draped over the canoes, and it's been a pretty fun piece to put together for me. Little different, but I tend to be drawn to fall scenes. You know, if you look at the body of work in my studio, they're very warm colors. I do paint with a very warm palette. And
you don't like the cold.
I don't like the cold, although I do. I have a couple of winter scenes that will be in the show that are they're not cold winter scenes. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, I think. People like winter scenes, but they don't want cold winter scenes.
How do you make a non-cold winter scene?
I think you have to get a lot of yellows and oranges in the highlights.
Okay.
You know,
it
can't be too blue and purple, or it turns people off, I think.
How'd you get started as a plein air painter?
I was an art teacher, and I taught in the public school system for a number of years. I left that for some health issues, and for a while didn't do much of anything. And then just one day, actually, my son saw something in the paper about, hey, there's this painting thing at TC Steel in Brown County. Let's go see what that's about. And I went there, and I think it was maybe the second year they had done the Festival of Flowers at TC Steel.
Okay.
And I thought, this is really fun,
you know?
And they were just then organizing. Some of the people that were at the paint out that year were organizing the Indiana Plein Air Painters.
Okay.
And I thought, I'm going to jump in. You know, it'll make me do things. And, you know, as the years have gone on, I've stayed active in IPAPA, was in one of their Painting Indiana books, the second book. I was one of the 10 artists in the Painting Indiana agriculture book. Try to make it to two or three paint outs at least a year, although there are many, many more than that every year. And just really found a neat group of people and, you know, a wonderful challenge. Painting outdoors is a challenge because you don't have a lot of time to make decisions. So, and then, like I said, I frequently finish them back in the studio, but I like that at least getting started outside.
Well, we were talking earlier before we went on the air. It seems, you know, a lot of plein air painters will do that. They'll get the preliminary sketch and a sense of color and such, you know, outside, and then often take photographs and then complete in the studio. It seems like there's an awful lot of plein air painters in Indiana. Am I just making that up?
Or? No, Indiana has, you know, it has such a rich history of painting. That I think people that don't know Indiana and haven't looked into the arts would not think so. You know, it's small Midwest state. What are they going to have?
And what are you going to paint outside? It's all flat, right?
That's right. It's all flat. In the summertime, it's all green. What are you going to do with that? You know, but I think, you know, you start looking at the Brown County guys, TC Steel and his group there. And, of course, all of them taught at Heron, you know, and we have this huge group. I mean, the Indiana Plain Air Painters is 300 strong at least, half of which I think are pretty active, you know, are outside painting at any given time. And we've influenced some of the surrounding states that now have bigger plein air groups because those people were coming to some of our events, and they've gone home, and that has grown.
Yeah.
But at any Indiana plein air event, you'll find multiple out-of-state painters, you know. And we go to Ohio and paint frequently. A lot of our plein air painters go to some of the bigger ones, the Door County in Wisconsin and the Easton Paint Out. And we have people at any given time, you know, from Indiana painting all over the West and sort of making a name, adding to the name of the quality of Indiana painters. Yeah, it's really exciting. It's an exciting time to be a plein air painter, I think.
Nancy, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter today. It's great to see you and looking forward very much to seeing your show at Speedway.
Well, thank you, Travis. It's been a pleasure.
Travis DiNicola with artist Nancy Maxwell. Her solo show, Nostalgic Impressions, opens at the Speedway Center for the Arts on Saturday, July 9th from 6:30 to 9 with a public reception. For more information, visit SpeedwayArts.org. Again, SpeedwayArts.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owls Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when we'll revisit some recent interviews while Sharon and I take some time off to watch the fireworks.
Look at the pretty blue ones. We'll hear my interview with Mark Zalonis about his long tenure as the IMA's Deputy Director of Environmental Affairs and Historic Preservation.
I'll chat with Hannah Lindgren about her film Food First.
And I'll take a look at 19 Stars of Indiana Art, the Indianapolis Museum of Art's tribute to our bicentennial, and we'll have that arts calendar week. What do we do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.